Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
The Republican Party likes to cloak itself in the language of religion. Now, our party doesn't talk about that as much, largely for a very good reason, which was we are committed to the separation of church and state, and we stand for people of any religion and people of no religion. But we should call out hypocrisy when we see it. And for a party that associates itself with Christianity, to say that it is okay to suggest that God would smile on the division of families at the hands of federal agents, that God would condone putting children in cages, has lost all claim to ever use religious language again.
That's Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg speaking during a recent debate, a rebuke to conservative Christians, to the GOP and the Christians among them. Now, the rebuke is essentially that you can't speak for God when it comes to these issues. Or if you do speak for God, maybe you should check with what God actually is saying. Now, the debate here is not so much a theological one as it is perhaps a political one. Everybody likes to invoke the deity on the left and on the right, but there do appear to be different rules for invoking the deity depending on whether you're on the left or the right. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. back live this Monday afternoon, July the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking about this rebuke from presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg against Christians. Pastor Hans Feeney will be our guest, a senior contributor to The Federalist for the first few minutes of the program. Then it's our series on Lutheran catechesis. Today, the second article of the Creed and the Sanctus. Pastor Peter Bender will join us, and we'll round everything off today going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Joining us to respond to Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg's rebuke of conservative Christians, Pastor Hans Feeney. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shawnehan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and he's a senior contributor to The Federalist, author of a recent column titled, Pete Buttigieg is Right that Christians Need to Be Rebuked. Hans, welcome back.
Good to be back.
What exactly did Pete Buttigieg say recently in rebuke of both the GOP and associated Christians?
Well, I have the quote here. Not terribly long. He was in one of the two Democratic debates recently, and he said the Republican Party likes to cloak itself in the language of religion. Now, our party doesn't talk about that as much, largely for a very good reason, which is that we're very committed to the separation of church and state, and we stand for people of any religion and no religion. But we should call out hypocrisy when we see it, and for a party that associates itself with Christianity to say that it is okay to suggest that God would smile at the division of families at the hands of federal agents, that God would condone putting children in cages, has lost all claim to ever use religious language again.
All right, let's see if we can take the claim apart a little bit, because you say the rebuke, if the shoe fits, then we should wear it. And we'll get to that in a moment, but it's the wrong person to make this rebuke. Why is Pete Buttigieg the wrong person to issue this rebuke?
Yeah, so, well, when he claims that the reason that Democrats don't talk about God or use religious language very much is because they're so firmly in support of the separation of church and state, this, it's just simply not true. I mean, first of all, there have been plenty of Democrats in the past who were certainly equally in favor of the separation of church and state who were more than happy to invoke religious language. The reality is that that's certainly not the case. And likewise, if you look at kind of the trajectory that the left is taking, so Joe Biden recently reversed his support of the Hyde Amendment, which is what prohibits using taxpayer funds for abortions. So now he's kind of recognized that if you want to be a Democrat in good standing, you can't allow pro-life people to have that freedom, to not have their tax dollars used to subsidize abortion. Democrats are firmly in favor of kind of all these lawsuits that we've seen where people have brought lawsuits against Christian bakers and florists for refusing to participate basically in gay weddings with the recent bill, the Equality Act, that Democrats are universally supporting, which is things like basically compels people to recognize various made-up gender identities and things of this nature. What you find in this is that there's a very strong force within the left that is actively intent on persecuting Christians, making no room for them in the public sphere, basically telling them that any beliefs they have regarding human sexuality, gender identity, abortion, all of these things are not welcome in the public sphere, and that they need to be compelled to violate their consciences in all of those ways. So the reality of the situation is that Mayor Buttigieg, whose name I'm never sure if I'm saying correctly, and his fellow Democratic candidates have all embraced policies that are profoundly, deeply anti-Christian. So it's not at all the separation of church and state. What they support is weaponizing the state to punish Christians for refusing to embrace the philosophical presuppositions of this kind of, you know, post-sexual revolution world. And the second reason is sort of tied in with that, is that Mayor Buttigieg is a gay man in a quote-unquote gay marriage, and a complete supporter of abortion rights all the way up until the 9th month of pregnancy. So for a guy who himself is personally living in open rebellion against God's teachings concerning human sexuality, as well as living in open rebellion against the scriptures' teachings about the sanctity of human life, for such a person to turn around and try to tell anyone that they are failing to live a Christian life is just sort of rich with irony. There's a profound hypocrisy there that makes him completely unqualified to be telling other Christians where it is that they have failed.
I've noticed this, and I think we've even talked about kind of the moving of the goalposts, and it's writ large when it's a presidential candidate who engages in it. And I think the folks who do this, especially public figures who do this on a regular basis, don't even realize they're doing it. They just seem to hold the opinion, well, if I believe something is right or wrong, that's a neutral position. And anyone who holds that contrary position to me has to be some sort of crazy person or radical. Is some of that going on with Pete Buttigieg too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's a very common mindset that people have that my philosophical presuppositions are not driven by religious ideology. So therefore, it's okay for them to be accepted into the public sphere. But your philosophical presuppositions that disagree with mine are driven by religious ideology. Therefore, they're not welcome in the public arena. You see this, you know, for example, in things like, as more and more, you know, local public libraries have been having drag queen story hour. And when people object to this, people say, oh, well, you have to keep your religious objections to yourself because that's the separation of church and state. Well, the idea that a drag queen is an inherently good thing, the idea that it's morally positive, the idea that, or just a lot of this gender identity stuff, the idea that people have an inner gender that's not made up of matter, it's not biological in nature, it's not something you can look at under a microscope, is entirely a philosophical concept. Whether it's an organized religion or not, it's born out of a religious worldview and how one religiously views the concept of what it means to be human and what it means to be male and female. And so people who embrace that mindset have this idea that, oh, well, no, that's not a religious thing. That's entirely about respecting people's individuality or respecting people's right to self-determination. So that has to become the standard default public way that we view things. And those of you who oppose this, that's clearly coming from a religious mindset. So yeah, you see this very much with, and Mayor Pete is a great example of this. So for example, the idea that everyone, say, has a right to health care, the idea that everyone, that we should care for everyone and his body. So that's a perfectly acceptable religious principle to bring into the public square if the conclusion is, therefore, you support the policies that I like. But anything else that's born from a Christian view, such as the dignity of human life, sanctity of marriage, things of that nature, suddenly that's not acceptable. There's a great amount of picking and choosing and a great amount of hypocrisy on that point.
And yet you do say that Mayor Buttigieg's rebuke, if coming from someone else, is actually a legitimate rebuke. How so?
Well, yeah, it can be. So in other words, there are a lot of times, and I'm sure most people have experienced this in their life, where people will use their politics as a means of covering up their bigotry and their hatred and their cruelty. And this isn't just limited to the right or the left. This is something that, all people do. And so, in other words, if you're looking at, say, something like social welfare programs or immigration, it's entirely possible to be opposed to open borders and to favor a strong, tight immigration policy without being motivated by, hatred or cruelty, bigotry, racism, all of these things. It's entirely possible. But there are times when people will use the kind of typical conservative talking points as a means of covering up the fact that what they really just don't like is they don't like people who don't look like them, they don't like people who don't share their culture, people who don't share their religion, people who don't share their skin color. And this is oftentimes, you kind of find this stuff, it's oftentimes revealed a little bit below the surface, so people will say things, they'll give kind of the typical conservative talking point on something like social welfare programs. So they'll say, well, I'm opposed to, welfare because it ends up hurting the people that it's meant to help. But then if you go a little bit further down, or they'll say things like, I think that it's better to help these people by means of, private charities than government programs. But then they never support any actual private charities, or they have no interest in actually showing any love and compassion personally on an individual level, like they've said you should, to people who are kind of in that, economic position. And so, oftentimes people will sort of reveal in the conversations that they have about these things that there's a strong reason to believe that a lot of their motivation is coming from a profoundly sinful place. And when that's the case, people do need to be rebuked. They need to have people who are fellow Christians who can call them to account for that and say to them, this is not, as Christians, how we're supposed to view our fellow man. It's not how we're supposed to love them and care for them. But the great problem is that if the people who are saying that are engaged in persecution of Christians legislatively, if they are engaged in supporting the slaughter of the unborn, even if they're right, it makes it impossible for the people who need to hear their rebuke to take them seriously, because they're walking around with a giant log sticking out of their eyeball trying to take the speck out of somebody else's.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're talking about Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg's rebuke of conservative Christians. When we come back, how does one oppose something like open borders without falling into animus toward immigrants? What is a life of discipleship? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Luther's Small Catechism, a manual for discipleship. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Professor John Pless. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Luther's Small Catechism, a manual for discipleship, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures and said to them, "Thus it is written, that the Christ should suffer and on the third day rise from the dead."
Morning Chapel from Cramer Chapel.
"And that repentance for the forgiveness of sins should be proclaimed in his name to all nations."
Live weekday mornings at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg's rebuke of conservative Christians. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest, senior contributor to The Federalist. Luther's Small Catechism has been called many things. It's been called the Bible of the laity, the Christian's prayer book. I like to refer to it as the ABCs of the Christian faith. It's also a manual for discipleship. That's, in fact, the subtitle of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Luther's Small Catechism, a manual for discipleship. You can find out more about this great resource that goes into detail teaching on Luther's Small Catechism at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask for Luther's Small Catechism, a manual for discipleship, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Hans, before the break, you were talking about that it's possible to oppose something like open borders without falling into animus for immigrants. How is that done?
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of it is just focusing on the humanity of the people involved. So you can recognize that it can be profoundly destructive to a country to have virtually no borders. You can certainly make the argument that the country doesn't really even exist if it doesn't have borders. If you can't police who can enter and who can and who can't enter, then you don't have a country, in the same way that if you aren't allowed to determine who enters your house or not, then you don't sort of really own your own property. But yeah, I think, for example, you know, if there are organizations that are dedicated towards, you know, making sure that, you know, I don't know, there have been a lot of organizations that haven't necessarily been able to actually bring these stuff to these detention centers, but, you know, bringing water and clothing and things of that nature to people who are in these places, recognizing that, you know, you can remain entirely neutral, or you can even remain opposed to them being given legal entry into the United States, but you still certainly want them to be fed and clothed and cared for, you know, so that they can simply just go back home in safety. So I think that's certainly the case. I think they should be, a really good example would be supporting mission work in, you know, for example, a lot of Central American countries, where, you know, the stronger the church is, the stronger the confession of faith in Christ is, the more stability that brings to a country. And the more that we can support the mission work of the church in nations where you have a lot of the kind of instability that causes people to want to come to the United States, if you firmly believe that this kind of mass immigration is a problem that's not helping them and it's not helping us, that's certainly a great way to do it, is to support missionary work there that can help bring stability and peace to these countries and help bring about a culture that's going to have a greater sense of stability that would enable people to stay there and develop the kind of lives that they would otherwise seek to find here.
If Pete Buttigieg is the wrong person to issue this rebuke, in your opinion, give me an example of who would be the right person to make this argument so that the kind of concerns that Pete Buttigieg may have about this could actually be addressed and heard.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are probably specific examples to kind of twist, to give an example of someone who's maybe not necessarily on this specific issue with regard to immigration, but someone who I think, the kind of person I think could be a really great example about talking about things like, for example, police brutality and things of that nature, is a guy like Tony Dungy. I'm probably biased a bit towards because he's a former coach of the Indianapolis Colts, but he's, you know, he is a very public Christian. He's been, you know, involved in pro-life organizations, very strongly pro-marriage, but he also comes from a bit of a different mindset and a bit of a different background than probably a lot of, you know, kind of typical Republican people in those areas, where he's able to speak to Christians and say, look, there is certainly a problem going on in certain areas here. And he's someone that people can trust, because you know that this isn't a guy who has been kind of swallowed up by the zeitgeist and swallowed up by kind of the social justice warrior movement. And he's someone who you know is on your side, someone that you know believes in Christ, someone that you know isn't willing to just simply push away what it is the scriptures teach about these issues. And so when that's someone like that is saying, hey guys, this is actually something that you should pay attention to, and you should try to be listening to people a bit more who are struggling with something that you might not understand, that, to me, is certainly a great example of someone who would kind of fit that category.
Why are there so few of those people, the right people to make the argument so that their concerns can be heard on both sides? of the political spectrum?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it's because people tend to tribally identify as conservatives or liberals or Republicans or Democrats first, and oftentimes Christians second. And so when that kind of becomes the case, you start off with the policy first and then try to make people's hearts fit the policy rather than starting off with people's hearts being united and then trying to kind of figure out, you know, sort of what the policy is to bring about those things. So, you know, we should all be united in that we want what's best for our neighbor, that we want the same thing, that we want people to be fed and clothed and cared for. We want people to have access to medicine and things of this nature, but we don't necessarily always agree on the best way to achieve those things. And so I think kind of political tribalism causes people to approach that in a sort of a backward sense, where we already have our policies chosen in our minds, and then oftentimes try to kind of retrofit our theology to make it fit the political conclusions we've already had.
So we're using our theology just to backstop the conclusions we've already come to politically.
Yeah, I think very often that's the case, yeah.
How do we reverse that? How do we say, look, start thinking like a Christian and then draw your political conclusions?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think one of the things would certainly be trying to kind of peel ourselves away from sort of outrage culture news, you know, so whether that's print media, television media, and things of that nature, where people are just, where a lot of what they consume is just meant to enrage them because, look, here's this terrible thing that this politician did or that this bad person said. And instead of that, kind of focusing more on the people actually involved in these cases. You know, for example, a good example of this would be with the refugee crisis and the border crisis, people obsessing over kind of dumb comments made by, you know, someone in Congress like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who oftentimes seems to spout off things that don't seem terribly believable or aren't terribly well informed. And if we would focus a bit more on the people actually affected by this crisis, hearing stories about that, learning how it is that we can, as Christians, we can help people, what options there are that aren't just simply let everyone into the country and, you know, have them, you know, basically have them on state welfare and things of that nature. The more that we can kind of focus on the people that actually need to be helped, the more that that will kind of gear our minds and our hearts towards finding solutions to that problem, rather than to just kind of focus our energy on being angered and outraged by people who aren't really committed to solving the problem.
A few minutes ago, you used the word persecution, and there are many both non-Christians and some Christians as well who would not just be wary of that term. They would probably mock you for saying that Christians in America suffer any kind of persecution. Why do you use the word?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's obviously a scale of persecution, and not all persecution is equal. So, no, we don't have people being put to death for being Christians in the United States. We don't have people, by and large, being thrown in jail simply for confessing Christ. But just because something isn't the most egregious form of persecution doesn't mean that still isn't present there. And if you're losing your job because you refuse to participate in a marriage ceremony that's contrary to your confession of faith, that's absolutely persecution. If you are a school teacher and you're under threat of being fired if you don't use transgender pronouns for a student because it's contrary to your confession of faith, that's absolutely persecution. So I think the tendency in people to try to claim that things aren't persecution because they aren't the worst form of it is just sort of silly to me. And I think all it's really intended to do is just kind of downplay the serious problems to such an extent that people don't take the threat seriously and then eventually get to the point where, because you weren't kind of keenly aware of the threat that you were facing, you're not prepared to fight the next step and next manifestation of that battle, which is only going to be even worse. So, I mean, look, the reality is if people think it's just and good for you to be fired from your job for refusing to use transgender pronouns, it's only the next step is that you should be thrown in jail for that. And maybe that won't happen, but it certainly is more likely to happen if we aren't keenly aware of what's going on now and if we don't take measures to try to combat that problem before we get to the next step.
Oh, finally, then, I mean, you watch these things. Do you think it's possible to kind of pull back from the outrage on both sides, to ignore the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's as outliers, as essentially denizens of political theater, and talk to one another again, maybe even Christians with non-Christians, about these very concerns?
Well, I think we should all make a concerted effort to do that, but the problem is that there's virtually no reward for that in the public realm today. So, yeah, I mean, as certain politicians have shown, politics is just theater now. It's just performance art. It's not something that's rooted in trying to accomplish real legislative change. It's just simply in making a name for yourself and creating a brand for yourself. And then people respond either positively or negatively towards that brand. And that's the way that we reward politics now. That's the way that we reward punditry. It's the way that we reward a lot of things. So it's going to take a lot of change in kind of our consumption of media habits in order to do that, which just simply means that, you know, we need to stop watching people who are just kind of incendiary, that we need to stop kind of giving our money and our time to people who are kind of that are engaging in behaviors that are kind of destructive towards political discourse. And I think that, yeah, as just in our own personal private lives, we need to kind of spend more time having honest conversations and talking to people and rediscovering a love for having that kind of be our primary way of learning about the views of other people rather than just learning about what the other side thinks through just performance artists and absurd, people who are just kind of absurd caricatures for the sake of making a brand for themselves.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shawnehon, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled Pete Buttigieg Is Right That Christians Need to Be Rebuked. Read it for yourself under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, our series on Lutheran catechesis continues. We're still in the second article. We're going to be talking about the connection between the latter part of that second article of the Creed and the Sanctus, the holy, holy, holy in the divine service. Pastor Peter Bender will be our guest. Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us. E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L press.us.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul Lutheran, Long Beach, California, Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois, Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi, St. John's Lutheran, Topeka, Kansas, Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Troy, Michigan, Zion Lutheran, Columbus, Ohio, Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas, St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin, University Hills Lutheran, Denver, Colorado, Grace Lutheran, Henderson, Nevada, and Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.